Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I am so glad you're with us, and I've got some great topics for you today. Boy, they're timely and relevant. And of course, that's important when we talk about financial stuff. Talking about what happened 20 years ago, while an interesting review is not always helpful today. And we've got some timely topics to get to. So if you don't mind, I'm going to just dive right in. We've got a great guest, reporter, Investment News. Trevor Honeycutt is on the line with me. InvestmentNews.com is the website. And Trevor, we took note of his recent articles talking about some very timely subjects that I want to get to. Trevor is a reporter with Investment News covering wealth management, financial technology, and financial markets. And he has been a freelance reporter, writer, editor, and researcher for numerous outlets, including AP, Associated Press, SF Chronicle, and Reuters, and has a BA in politics from Pomona College?
That's right.
Okay. Well, welcome to the program, Trevor. We're really super happy to have you. Can you tell? I'm very happy to have you on the program.
I'm very excited to be here.
Well, and a Master's in Science and International Relations from London School of Economics and Political Science, so he is also a world traveler. So we've got a lot going on, as we often do, and I really am curious to get your insight, because you, Trevor, recently wrote three great columns or articles that we picked up on: Argentina, the Apple, and Bill Gross. So we can start however you want, but those are three great topics to get to. They're so relevant. Why don't we start with the last and work our way up the Family Feud top answers that we want to survey here? Bill Gross left PIMCO, and I think most people know that unless they have been hiding out, which maybe is not a bad thing, but Bill Gross leaves PIMCO, and he's over at Janus now. And what else should we know?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot to know and a lot of questions that still aren't answered. I think the investment management world is still reeling over the fact that the man who created probably the world's most famous bond investment shop in the world, it was essentially forced out, depending on who you ask, of the company that he started in the 1970s and built into a $2 trillion behemoth. And he's gone off to another firm, a smaller firm called Janus Capital Group. There are still a lot of unanswered questions about, you know, one, how he left, why he left, and what exactly he's going to be doing at Janus. So I think any investor who is with PIMCO or with Janus should definitely keep their eyes open for what's happening here.
It's a very interesting story. And I know that PIMCO, and not everybody knows this, but PIMCO is owned by a global financial services conglomerate that is a juggernaut, and that's Allianz, and their headquarters is Germany. How long has PIMCO, do you know how long they've been a subsidiary of Allianz? Is this something where he built it and sold it to them and then stayed on, or was it something he built for them?
No, this is PIMCO has been with Allianz for some time now. I don't remember the exact year. He founded PIMCO as his own shop. It was a small firm managing under $15 million back in the 70s.
Okay.
And the Allianz relationship happened several decades after that.
Okay, so he cashed in pretty big when he sold to Allianz, I would imagine.
He did indeed. I mean, it was estimated earlier this year that he's worth about $2.3 billion.
I had done my own research, and I was going to say about $2 billion. I'm right there with you. Okay, so he's doing okay financially.
He's doing very well financially.
Had a little tongue-in-cheek there. And it's interesting about the move or the departure, because there was the big blow-up or big disagreement, whatever you want to call it, with his co-president, L. Arian? Was he the co-president or co-CEO?
Co-CIO, co-chief investment officer. That was a title they shared.
Okay. He left, went over into like an Allianz bullpen, holding pen for another position, but he's not come back.
No.
Interesting.
That would be probably even more shocking if he had come back, he's still at Allianz.
Okay, so see, I was expecting that he was in a bullpen just warming up until Bill Gross threw his arm out, and then he'd come out and be the relief pitcher and take over. But that hasn't happened, and they're making other structural changes. And so it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I think your point is well taken, Trevor. There's a lot of questions here, and I'm not going to tell anybody, hey, get into Janus or get out of PIMCO, but it certainly raises the question. And you know, there's been all these reverberations through the bond market and quote unquote, the headlines are a $42 trillion bond market affected by one guy changing jobs or, you know, leaving one to go to the other. And I guess it shines a light on how, even though it's a big market, how small of a market it can be.
That's true. That's true. And if you talk to bond traders, you know, they will tell you this is not like stocks. This is still very much a handshake business. And a big investor like Bill Gross is somebody that everybody on the street knows and feels the reverberations when his funds make a strategy shift.
Well, and it's interesting because at the parent company, the Allianz parent company, the owner of PIMCO, there were also some recent changes with their chief executive officer.
That's right. he has announced that he will be stepping down next year.
So the natural question, of course, is there any relationship or is it just simply coincidence that that's also happening at the same time?
I would say that would be conjecture for me,
yes,
for me to say.
Yeah.
But it's another question to ask.
You
know, but Allianz has definitely taken a hit. You can see it on their earnings statements. The loss of assets that's happened at PIMCO over the last 17 months has been a huge hit.
Do you have a ballpark amount they've lost over that 17-month period?
So the Total Return Fund, which is their biggest fund, it's the biggest bond fund in the world, was run by Mr. Gross until last week, had lost between $60 and $70 billion in that period.
Wow. That's a lot. So what's the total assets still in there? Do you have a ballpark on that as well?
$198 billion.
Okay, well, that's a significant drop.
It's a very big drop.
I mean, you're lost almost a third?
Yes, and just doing some back-of-the-envelope math here. And you know, the question for investors then in that fund is how well is this company able to deal with those redemptions? And are they forced to sell assets at prices that will hurt my return on that investment?
Well, that's exactly the point, and I'm glad you illuminated that, Trevor, because it's not, you know, the folks leaving, that affects the management and how they deploy the assets, and they have to sell things potentially at a time when they don't really want to sell them. And so the folks that are staying in the funds could be left, quote-unquote, holding the bag.
That's true. And believe me, PIMCO has gone to great lengths to try to explain to investors that, look, we invest a lot in very liquid, very easily tradable markets, like government securities, like treasury bonds.
Yes.
And so because of that, we'll be able to meet the demands of investors who want to take their money out. But that's what they're saying. But that again is one of these unanswered questions that we're going to have to see over the next few months.
Yeah, we would expect them to say that, and that makes sense, and hopefully it is true. And that it's easy for them to do that. And they probably have plenty of liquidity, but that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Trevor Honeycutt, ladies and gentlemen, Investment News, and he is reporting to us on some timely topics. We're going to grab a quick break. We'll come back, and we're going to go south. We're going to talk about Argentina and what has been happening there. Stay right there.
Here's a newsflash. All financial advisors are not created equal. Some invest in their education by getting advanced degrees and professional certifications. Some don't. Some advisors get multiple licenses and offer a wide range of solutions. Some don't. Some advisors choose to be independent. Some don't. Some advisors disclose how they are paid and the fees they charge. Some don't. Please don't settle for a don't. Let me introduce you to independent advisor David Holland. David is a CPA, a certified financial planner, a personal financial specialist, and a chartered financial consultant. With 23 years financial experience, David offers a wide range of personalized solutions and discloses all fees in writing. Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting.
And welcome back. Trevor Honeycutt's on the line with me, reporter Investment News, and we're getting his take and leveraging his resources on some of these current topics. And the next one we wanted to turn to is Argentina. Trevor, give my listeners, if you would, just kind of a quick overlay or overview of what's been happening in Argentina and their debt and some of their battles. And it seems like we're seeing them in the news, and we're seeing there something going on, and it doesn't sound good. And the politicians are talking a lot, and I don't know if they're
right.
It's good for what we're hearing. So help us out.
All right. So let me give you just a very quick history of what's happened there.
Okay. Good.
So back in 2001, Argentina had a default. They could not pay their creditors. And they've gone through a very long process to try to get back from that default, to be able to make a deal with people who have lent them money from around the world since that point. One of the things that they did is that they made a deal with most of the people who held their bonds. Those bondholders agreed to take less money back than they were owed in a way to help Argentina get out of this default and meet their obligations. The problem is there are a group of hedge funds who, when Argentina was going through this debt crisis, picked up a lot of the what had become very cheap debt. And these hedge funds did not agree to the terms that Argentina agreed to with these other bondholders. They wanted the full amount of the full value of the bond repaid to them. So they've been in a very lengthy court battle here in New York against Argentina. And frankly, Argentina has not been doing very well in this court case. It's been appealed up to the federal court level, and the judge has been not terribly swayed by the arguments that they've been making, and he's sided mostly with the hedge funds.
Really? That's interesting.
Exactly. And so what's happened is that Argentina... the judges said that Argentina is not going to be able to repay any of its bondholders until they also repay these hedge funds as well. And Argentina has said that they would like to be able to repay the bondholders that agreed to its deal. So what they've been doing is, against the orders of the court, they've been paying those bondholders in Argentina. And so what happened on Monday is that the judge basically held the country of Argentina in contempt of court. So that was kind of the latest twist and turn in this. And the Argentina government has been very fiery in terms of their rhetoric.
Right. That's what I was referring to.
They call the hedge funds vulture funds.
Yeah.
They say that the court and that the United States is working against them.
Right.
And they've been very angry.
Yeah. That was an excellent summary, because I've been trying to follow it, and it's like it seems to twist and turn, and so the hedge funds stepped in and picked up cheap debt. They got it at a big discount because somebody else said, hey, I don't want this. I want out of it. And they bought it, and they're speculating, and they're trying now to get more than what they paid for it. And they'd like to, and obviously that's where they're going to get their return. And hedge funds like to take positions, and they don't stay in them necessarily long term. And what's really interesting to me, Trevor, about this is that you have a sovereign country who is in a court argument or a lawsuit, a court legal action that is in the United States. So if the court makes a ruling that, no, you got to pay these guys, this way or that then is enforceable against the sovereign nation?
That is the argument that the court has taken, because the bonds were issued in New York.
Okay.
That the United States has jurisdiction.
Okay. Is it? I mean, what a crazy world we live in, huh?
Yes.
I mean, really.
I agree with you more.
So the implications, of course, for investors and everyday people and folks listening to this program is that, number one, I'll start and you tell me what else we need to think about this or be aware of or at least considering. And then that is, number one, know what you own, know what you're investing in. Aren't the Argentine funds, those bonds, aren't they invested or aren't they owned by various mutual fund companies?
Absolutely, they are. I completely agree with you again. I think it's just a question of know what you own. When we looked at this, when we did a study of this in the summer, we found 635 mutual funds and exchange-traded funds that are invested in that country's debt. So that could be something that you own in your retirement account or your brokerage account. You might be surprised when you read the holdings report or the prospectus to learn that you might have a little investment in a little stake in Argentina.
Well, and this is why it's so critical, and it may have been when you first bought it, there wasn't, but now there is. I mean, these mutual funds, by their very nature, part of what they're paid to do is to buy and sell stocks or bonds, and they seek opportunity and so on and so forth. But you might end up with something that you didn't start with. And I mean, for my clients, we do ongoing analysis every month and leverage our relationship and subscription with Morningstar to go in there and look at least once a month at the underlying holdings in these accounts or in these funds. But you really got to pay attention. And it's the same, of course, with stock exposure as well. So that's the first thing that's a big takeaway. And the second is that when you get outside of investing in the United States, you've got additional complexities that can get involved, because here we have as you said, there's jurisdiction with New York, but it still is more complicated and more involved because of it being not the United States. It's another country.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, it's fascinating, actually. I find this kind of stuff really remarkable, and definitely something to pay attention to. So the latest you heard then was, or have researched and taken note of, Trevor, is that they're still in this legal battle. The court is saying they're in contempt because they're paying the ones they made a deal with. They're not making any payments to the hedge fund owned bonds.
That's right.
Okay, so they're playing hardball.
They are playing hardball, and they say they're between a rock and a hard place, because they don't think they're legally allowed to pay those hedge funds.
Wow. I tell you what, it's remarkable. Very interesting. Trevor Honeycutt, ladies and gentlemen, reporter, Investment News, and helping us really get a clear understanding of what's going on with some of these topics. And we've got one more, which is Apple. We'll grab a quick break and we'll be back to take a bite. Stay right there.
Does getting financial advice seem like a game of cat and mouse? Then maybe it's time to hire a fiduciary. What's a fiduciary? That's a financial professional who puts the needs of his clients ahead of his own. Being a fiduciary also means that the advisor should recommend the products and services he believes will best serve his client's needs, not what an insurance or investment company tells him he has to sell. So next time you're talking to an advisor, ask him, "Are you a fiduciary?" The answer should only be yes or no. If the advisor doesn't know, then the answer is probably no. This public service announcement has been brought to you by Holland Financial. We want to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we are back with Trevor Honeycutt, helping us understand some of these current topics. And Trevor, I want to go to Apple, because, of course, they've been all the rage, or at least in the news quite a bit, with the release of new products. And of course, they not long ago had their lawsuits with Samsung. And it's hard to miss Apple, because they are all that. They are a big deal. So give us kind of a thumbnail sketch of what's been happening with Apple, and we'll get into some detail about where things are and what the implications are for investors.
Well, I think the investment community has really kind of struggled to define exactly what Apple is.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's a really exciting, technology company to watch, and those attributes are kind of typically oriented, you think of that as being like a growth stock.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Apple is also a really established player in the business and kind of a leader in the investment space. And so, some people, want to define it as being, a core kind of value-oriented company. And so that's kind of been what the investment community has tried to struggle with You know, while the company has redefined itself, and they've had this leader Tim Cook now in place for some time, and they continue to release products like the new iPhone 6, the watch that they've just released. So it's kind of a struggle for investors to deal with, I think.
Well, I agree with you. And the market cap right now, total value of all shares outstanding, just shy of $600 billion, $597, $598 billion. The stock recently here in the $100 range. And, you know, they did the split and all of that. Dividend here, this is the interesting, they're kind of threading the needle on the dividend. It's not what you would call a high dividend stock, but it's not zero. I mean, you know, it's just shy of a 2% yield for the dividend. And so it's kind of, it is in that kind of middle ground, but it's at that, you know, that market cap is pretty big. So it's a good sized company. There aren't many companies that are bigger.
It is. And as another note on the dividend part of the story, the Apple, you know, has a lot of cash here in the United States and around the world that they have decided not to deploy, but to keep on the books. And investors really had to force them to to start a dividend program and return some of that cash to shareholders.
Yeah, that's actually always been a very curious thing to me, because I try to put myself in you know, the management of Apple's shoes, and I think, well, if I've got all that cash and I'm sitting on it, then either there's only a couple scenarios that I could think through the thought process there of why. And one is, you know, hey, we don't think that there's anything worth buying. Two, we figure we're earning enough on cash. Or three, they think there's something coming that they will need the money for. Or four, that there's going to be an opportunity to buy something down the road, and they're just waiting and biding their time. And I guess maybe I might not be as patient on that. I might be looking for other opportunities to buy and put that money to work and buy companies that could be integrated into the Apple whole platform. But I just haven't seen that, at least not to a significant degree.
And I would add two things to that list.
Okay.
The one is that historically Steve Jobs was simply against it.
Okay.
He didn't want to pay a dividend, and anything that Steve Jobs did not want to do, the company did not do.
Fair enough.
That's the first rule of Apple.
Okay.
And the other reason is tax, for tax purposes.
Yeah.
So the companies kept a lot of their cash abroad. And they don't want to repatriate it to the United States because there would be some tax consequences for doing so.
Okay, well that's a fair take. The other thing, of course, that what makes Apple so relevant and important to talk about is that, and I see this out, you know, out here on the street doing the work that I do, Trevor, as a planner. You know, I do analysis of people's portfolios almost pretty much every day. And we look at our existing clients' portfolios every day. And, you know, as you would expect, Apple is almost always one of their top holdings. Because it's in, you know, the analogy I use is all of the mutual funds, all those mutual fund managers all go shopping at the same stock market for what they put in their stock market, their mutual fund shopping cart. And Apple is in a lot of their portfolios. And if somebody's not paying attention, be it Apple or another stock, they could have more of it because they're all buying from the same stock market.
Exactly. Exactly. And people want to make sure that they don't have too much exposure and that they remain, you know, what we would say diversified.
Yes.
That they keep broad exposure to the market and not just to the success or failure of one company. Even though Apple's been doing pretty well over the last year.
Yeah, and that is a good point, Trevor. We're not saying, hey, bad company, nothing like that. I don't care how good a company is. I can't recommend that we load up on it. And, you know, we go back, it's not that long ago that Wall Street just couldn't heap enough praise on a company called Enron.
That's right.
And we all know how the story ended, and so it ended very badly. And 20-some thousand Enron ex-employees would say, you know, it's probably a good idea to be diversified.
That's true.
You know, and again, a lot of what may happen with Apple, of course, as I know that you have commented on this with your reporting, you know, a lot of this depends on what Tim Cook, the guy in charge, what his vision is for the company. That, you know, that's one guy, and a guy, he's got a whole team, but it's his vision that's going to play out, right?
That's absolutely true, and that's why. You know, most people would say you want to have exposure to as many companies, as many good companies as possible, so that the decisions of one or two people don't tank your retirement.
Well, and I use this analogy recently or scenario with a client I'm working with, because we were talking about how they, you know, the concentrations, and we were talking about Apple as an example. And, you know, and I have had Apple products. I have Apple products, and I've also got, but I have a Samsung phone right now. If you'd asked me 5 years ago if I would have a Samsung phone, I'd say, I don't even know who Samsung is. I didn't know they did phones. Today, I've got a Samsung phone. But the point I made was that the reason you don't want to load up on one company, as good as an Apple or somebody like that is, a market leader, I mean, you still want the diversification, and here's why. Let's say that, you know, 3 months from now, somebody comes out with a device that is like a sticker that goes on the back of your palm, it goes on the back of your hand, and so you stick it on there, you flip your hand over like you're holding something, and up pops a holographic image that's a personal assistant that turns and spins and talks to you, and you interact with it. You think that would change Apple's world?
I think it would.
So,
is this something you're rolling out?
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but maybe just among friends here that I can share that. But you know, there are technologies that are being worked on that we don't know about. And if somebody brought, I'm using that just as an extreme example, but you know, there's a reason why we don't buy buggy whips anymore.
Right?
There's a reason why, you know, we don't have a somebody who does horseshoes on every corner. Right? I mean, so the innovation could substantially disrupt. Look at BlackBerry.
Right.
You know, remember the Palm? Well, I don't know. Do you remember the Palm Pilot?
I remember it.
I
might actually still have the device in my house.
Well, the Palm Pilot, I mean, I got that. Boy, I thought that was slick. It had a little antenna that you would flip up. It was plastic. I thought that was really cool. But that thing looks like a Model T compared to a Ferrari.
True.
I mean, really, compared to the phones and the technology, and we shouldn't even call them phones anymore. They're, you know, computerized personal communication devices. And we're not far from them being on our chest with the little Star Trek. You just give it a little tap and you can call anybody on the ship or the landing party. I mean, it's really... that's where we're headed. And so the point is that somebody could come out with a disruptive, hugely competitive product and rock Apple or any other company's world. And this is the reason we just don't put all of our eggs in one basket.
That's right. That's right. And we want, and you know, I think this conversation is really geared towards long-term investors.
Yes,
you know?
Of course.
So we're trying to prepare our portfolios and our investments for where things are going to be in 10 and 15 and 20 and 30 years.
Well, that's well put, and I appreciate your indulging me with my long explanation there, Trevor, and I really appreciate your insight and input and doing the research that you're doing and writing the columns and the articles. And if you just joined us, Trevor Honeycutt is our guest today, reporter, Investment News, and investmentnews.com, a great resource. We're on there all the time looking at what's going on in the investment world, and we have folks like Trevor to thank for that, and we appreciate you being on, and we'll have to have you back, Trevor.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.